photographer, and now for something completely different than Origins. So I have to start with a disclaimer, because in this presentation I'll talk about Baptists, Catholics, Reformed, and Methodists, and I just want you to know I grew up Baptist, so I'm not taking pot shots at Baptists. My father's a Baptist minister. I have a brother who's Catholic, and I've spent most of my adult life amongst the Reformed. So it's only the Methodists I haven't been part of. So some people would call that being confused. I call it being enriched. So why is it necessary to study worship and sermons? And I think it's because worship remains a salient feature of American life, and sermons, especially if you're there every week, shape the way you see things. So this particular project is part of a larger project that uses the social sciences and its methods to investigate the transformative nature of Christian worship. And it was supported by the Worship Institute at Calvin, which is funded by the Lilly Foundation. In the larger project, 10 churches in a transect from the middle of the city out in one quadrant were studied over a year's time. And we had pairs of urban and suburban churches, and they were from four different traditions: mainline Methodist, fundamentalist Baptist, Catholic, and Reformed. The particular urban transect the group of us chose was chosen because of its ethnic and denominational mixes, and the fact that it was both urban, suburban, and rural, and because of its ethnicity and race. There was quite a bit of diversity within it. So within those 10 churches, there were a whole group of us that studied these 10 churches. We collected one sermon a month from each church for 1 year. And my focus was on relations between nature and God and humanity. Well, we found out of those 120 sermons, there was absolutely no mention of nature whatsoever. So, like, no data, okay? So what I did is I went a step further to try to push that issue, and so I collected sermons from these churches in the 3 weeks after the Hurricane Katrina and the Asian tsunami, when they were available, and also on the web. And so I picked up sermons on the web that were from those 3 Sundays post each event and from these denominations. So why, as a geographer, do I study this? You know, this research really falls at the intersection of 3 different areas of geography. One is just human nature interactions. Another one is the study of religious belief systems. But then the third, and probably the most crucial, is the study on natural hazards in the field of geography. Geographers have written quite a bit on how natural events interact with human choices, and that's what creates natural hazards. So it's that sort of framework that I come from when I did this research. So this is the list of numbers of different kinds of denominations represented in the sample amongst these 4 different categories. And let me say, the Baptist sermons were far longer than the Catholic sermons. So those were the days I finally had to go out and get some more caffeine in order to get through it. The Catholic and the Baptist samples included several African-American churches and also some churches from outside the United States. There were Canadian, Australian, British. And I really found no relationship between ethnicity and the country of origin for these sermons in terms of what I found. Now, if you remember these events, you remember the reported responses in the press, which ranged from people claiming that these events were acts of God, especially cleaning the Swedes out of Thailand for all their immorality, to the force of evil. I saw one that talked about the tsunami as the face of the devil. At the same time, somebody else was calling it God's wrath, to human-enhanced events. So the 4 major categories that arose in my analysis of the sermons, these are the 4 categories that arose. First one was eschatology, And that's, of course, the study of the end times. But I looked at this as beliefs about the future and the interpretation of these events. The second category was integration. I looked at how these sermons theologically put together God, nature, and humans into a framework. The third one I found was really, what did the sermons ask people to do in response to these events? And the fourth one was, how are those who have suffered from these events depicted, or otherness? What's the relationship between ourselves and these others? Eschatology. First, let me just talk about the range of responses I found when it came to this category. It went from everything from not mentioning any meaning or mention of eschatology to just some references to, you know, in the future the earth will be perfect after the second coming, to using these events to call people to repent, to using the events as these are the signs of the times, these are the things that are telling us that Christ is going to return, to more of a present tense, just we are all changed, we're all saved, and we have no fear of death and should just be compassionate for people. So quite a range in responses. Let me just talk about the findings in terms of this category. The majority of the Reformed sermons made no mention of eschatological themes. About 20% did talk about the second coming of Christ and the perfection of the world, but was more in reference to, you know, actually saying that the hurricanes and the earthquakes were the result of the fallenness, and these kinds of painful events won't be there in the future. So the Methodists likewise made very few references to eschatological themes. They put their emphasis on the present, that we're changed and we shouldn't fear death. And the Catholics were similar to that, but what was really interesting about the Catholics is that they would then use models like Jesus and his suffering to help people identify with these events, or the mystery of the suffering, the model of Mary pondering it all, or the Holy Family that was also who were also refugees. So it was a use of these biblical stories as ways of understanding these events. The Baptist sermons put the most emphasis on eschatological connections. 47% referred to these events as signs of the times, predicting the return of Christ, and 11% called for repentance due to this coming judgment. So these events were used as warnings of coming judgment and used as lessons. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Integration of nature and God. How do sermons theologically construct these relationships? And this is sort of a complex category, so I'll go through these. You know, first of all, there's the relationship between nature and God. And you see a range of perspectives. Nature is totally apart from God, or else God is actually sustaining the ongoing workings of nature. Or God uses nature to teach a lesson, so it's more God using it directly to teach a lesson to humans. To more of a sense of sovereignty, we don't have to worry because ultimately God is in control of nature, to which was the most interesting, this more complex idea that God is certainly breathing into nature but can't step in and out. Okay? So quite a range. Then there's the problem of nature in terms of whether it's good or evil. And here you had several different perspectives. One, that human sin has warped nature, so it's off kilter. And then, of course, you have a view that nature is good. And then nature is neutral. And then yet another category is trying to understand humans in nature. And what was really interesting in this category is normally you would see quite a bit of humans over nature. But because these were such extreme events, they couldn't talk about that, right? So instead, you just had humans and nature as co-equal, or nature is a force at which humans are subject. So what were the findings here? The Reformed sermons emphasized the role of God as an ongoing sustainer of nature over all the other groups. Reformed sermons emphasize God's sovereignty over nature rather than nature as a subjugating force on humanity. One very interesting comment from one Reformed pastor was that nature was fallen and off-kilter, which wasn't so unusual to find. But then he used the illustration of the tilt of the earth at 15 degrees as evidence for this. And I'm going, you know, Reformed people like to be in good order, vertical, and you go, vertical, I mean, in comparison to what? You could at least get the inclination right. So, anyway. The Methodist sermons were characterized by the absence of any reflection on nature at all. You know, nature was largely absent from their talking about these events. The Catholic sermons showed a general lack of integrative thought, but where nature was mentioned, it was the only group that emphasized that nature was good. And so the emphasis on the goodness of nature was seen in comments within the Catholic tradition on the need of humans to harmonize with nature. So Catholic sermons were unique on the emphasis on humans being subject to nature and the need to fit in with nature rather than it affecting us. And the Baptists showed a consistent use of nature in the abstract. God uses nature to teach us a lesson or give us a warning. This was the only group to use nature in this way. Baptists also pointed to human sin as the source of the imperfection in nature, and Baptist sermons emphasized God's direct use or control of nature and nature's being off kilter. But I would say probably the Baptists, the real uniqueness is you got the sense that God purposefully caused something to happen in order to teach us a lesson. An understanding of natural hazards and events like Katrina and the Asian tsunami in relationship to human choices was largely absent from all these groups. Several Catholic sermons did show analysis of the relationship between climate change and human culpability, maybe rising sea levels. Methodists showed some understanding of structural analysis, you know, the relationship between poverty and the ability to flee New Orleans. But the Baptists showed the absolute lowest level of reference to that kind of structural understanding. Only one sermon showed even the most minimal understanding, and several verged on actually blaming the victims for their plight. So, for example, there was one sermon that blamed the Asian countries for not having a warning system, that if they had... or blame people in New Orleans, if they had only heeded the warnings and then made a theological point about it, they would have been saved if they had only gotten out. Responsibility and responses. What is the called for response in these events? And here, again, the range. First, sometimes there was just no response. They would refer to these incidents, but it didn't ask you to respond in any way. Sometimes it was more of an internal, you know, discover the meaning in these events, this, in the suffering, lament, value the poor as God does. And then I had two subcategories, individualized responses and more communal responses. So, for example, in the range of individualized responses, it asked people to be individually show compassion, service and generosity, die to yourself, put your faith in Jesus, repent, witness, pray, and take personal responsibility for yourself. So it was calling for individuals to do these things. But then there's a whole other category, which I call the communal or institutionalized responses, where the sermons would emphasize, you know, joining God's people in responding to these events through relief efforts of the denomination, corporate giving, or changing the structures that actually make these events happen. So a few references to that. So those were the categories. Now, the Reformed sermons showed a balance between these individualized responses and the communal responses. Within those categories, as the individualized ones, it was asking people to show individual compassion and put faith in Jesus. Communal responses focused on being community agents of hope. So it talked about giving communally to relief efforts and corporate giving. And the Methodists were quite similar in that they had this balance between the individual and the communal response and the same idea of giving corporately for this. But one interesting thing with the Methodists is they were one of the few groups to then move to the next level and talk about changing policies, governmental policies, that lead to these kinds of events. But that was still a pretty minor part of the Methodists, but the only ones that mentioned that. And in the Methodists, there was also a real call to be willing hands individually and collectively and pray and grieve with those who suffered. Catholics showed a tendency toward the more communal response, which I think is not unexpected in a much more communal tradition. While compassion and prayer represented the majority of the more individualized calls and responses, communal responses included a strong emphasis on structural change, support relief, and being agents of hope. They're really the only group that specifically talked about how we should value the poor and the hungry and to see these people through God's eyes. And one phrase that showed up several times spoke of the need to seek peace and justice, dignity for all humans, and live out lives of concern. So it's almost like a more global embracing of the people involved in these events. The Baptists, unsurprisingly, had a much greater level of individualization in their response. And the focus was on individual compassion and service and generosity, but also individual reflection and repentance and a need to witness to those people who were involved in these events. So calls for individuals to witness. Otherness. How are those who have suffered from these events depicted? And really, this is what focuses on what is the relationship between sin and suffering and the use of nature in that relationship and the distance between us and them in the understanding of these events. Reformed sermons, more than any others, purposefully kept saying, we are sinful like those who have experienced these disasters. And I talked to one of the historians at Calvin who said during Puritan times when there was somebody who was hung, there would actually be a sermon beforehand, and the sermon would focus on how you are no different than this person. You know? So it was interesting then because you got an echo of that explicitly, continually saying that. So 50% of the sermons purposefully led to some form of self-identification of the congregation with those who are suffering in terms of saying you are no different than them, so don't think you are. So suffering was seen rather as a general result of the general fallenness of the world and relationships. The Methodists emphasized the universality of all of those who suffer. And they named and really personalized it. So they had the strongest measure of self-identification. And the way you saw them do this is they would specifically refer to people in their congregation who knew people who were involved in these events. You know, trying to make that connection for people. And they would refer to the people who suffered as neighbors and use that kind of language. And they drew no connection between sin and suffering. You got the feeling on the Reform side, they specifically told you there was no relationship, but the Methodists didn't even have to mention it. It was just not even there. Rather, they saw the problem of evil as a mystery, and one sermon actually turned the tables on the congregation and said, who suffered? And then think about who was left behind in New Orleans, trying to get them to think about the why of the event and think a little bit more structurally about it. Catholic sermons were especially consistent in their strong self-identification. Again, illustrations or self-identification was made with the Holy Family, which intensified this identification. In addition, comments were made on the need to help the poor, the universality of those who suffered from these events, And even one step further, one sermon was critical of those who separated themselves from the suffering. So it was saying not only, you know, should you identify with them, it's wrong to separate yourself from those people. Baptists were the only group to show boundaries between themselves and those who suffered in these events. The lack of identification tended toward blaming the victim. When identification was present, it was focused on the common fear of the people in the congregation and those that were suffering, the common fear of the coming judgment. So that's where the commonality between the congregants and those involved in these events came from. Just to give you one example of, again, sort of the distance that Baptists placed between themselves in these events. One sermon was talking about the tsunami, and the comment was, "Who among us would have predicted that the Red Sox would win the World Series after 100 years and that the year would have ended with a lifetime tsunami disaster?" And when I read that, I thought, let's see, the Red Sox, 250,000 people. It was just sort of a, but I think it showed the distance from identifying with the people there. Baptists were the only group to argue for a connection between sin and suffering. The events were used as spiritual lessons illustrating the failure of people to heed the warning and evacuate. The African American Baptist Church was an exception to this trend. The sermon rather argued that the event could have happened at their own front door. Differences amongst these groups were significant. While the Baptists identify themselves as literalists, and remember, this was a fundamentalist Baptist subset. It was not just I grew up American Baptist. There's a great range amongst Baptists. They use natural disasters as very abstract lessons, distancing themselves from the events and those affected. Catholics differentiated themselves in their communally strong identification with those affected by the events, intensified through identification with religious figures who also experienced suffering, but also in their placement of people as being subject to nature, a nature which was good. Methodism reflected its mainline denominational heritage in its emphasis on social justice, but also reflected its own individual heritage, which emphasizes personal spiritual growth. This appeared in the absence of any reflection on the relationship between God, nature, and humans. Reformed theology was seen in both the emphasis of God as the ongoing sustainer of the natural world, as well as the express belief that this actual world will be made new when Christ returns. Overall, it appears that across the groups, they exhibited little understanding of how natural events such as earthquakes, tsunamis, and hurricanes are part of the natural order of things. And they had little understanding concerning the relationship between human choices and nature, and how they lead to natural hazards. And in fact, when I started this study, I was almost certain that we would see more of that reflection in the Hurricane Katrina event because there was so much more in the press. You know, it was closer to home. Talk of the wetlands and, you know, all of these things, but just none of it showed up in the sermons. There really was none of that was picked up on. And very little understanding of the relationship between poverty and who is affected by these events. Natural disasters are only going to increase with the combination of increased populations, particularly along coastlines, and climate change. Faith-based groups are going to be needed to provide a great deal of relief when these disasters occur. And the great range of perspectives found in this study among group of faith-based entities illustrate how we need to increase their understanding of natural systems, but also the relationship between human choice and natural systems. In the end, these natural hazards are not acts of God as much as the result of human choices. Thank you. We have a couple minutes for questions. And also, if you want, I've given a much longer and more theologically dense version of this, which is if you search on Calvin's web for religion and social order, you'll find the audio tape at the Worship Institute. Questions? Yeah.
On the relationship between them, not mentioning how human choices can contribute to the scope of the disaster, do you get a sense of the reason why? I mean, you know, one of the things that always bothered me was the idea that, you know, all of the world is basically below sea level. You know, and that's why it's hard to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone always keeps saying, oh, we will rebuild, we will rebuild.
I don't think there was not even any mention of New Orleans being under sea level. Only one Catholic sermon did talk about rising sea level and sort of implied maybe the wetlands, but just no reflection at all. Well, you got the sense, you know, even from the comment about the tilt of the earth, that there's just a real lack. And the idea that these events are the result of the fall, I think that was pretty pervasive. And so if you believe they're the result of the fall, then you really don't have to go to that next step and say it's something that we've done, rather than seeing them as, yeah, the result of the fall and that we're making really bad choices. So, no, just not there at all.
Yeah. I didn't understand. Are the sermons from the region or are they national sermons?
National. International, actually.
I mean, I think that the bigger sermons actually came from the churches and what the response was locally. I mean, our church in Baton Rouge was a large Southern Baptist church.
Yeah.
We became a Red Cross shelter.
Yeah.
That tracked primarily African Americans. We had to change our whole program for 3 months while the shelter was open. We couldn't have Sunday school. We had just church services on Sunday. And the shelter people lived there.
Yeah, see what I...
And we had a big place for clothes, donation. Yep. Lots of people donated clothes. We had truck clothes coming in. And we gave out clothes to people who lost all their clothes. And then we had another part that was fixing meals and going around to hotels and the various places where people were... The response of the faith community, I mean, I don't even remember any sermons.
Yeah.
I do remember what the sermons of the individual lives were.
Yeah.
Spoke loud and everything else.
Absolutely. And a lot of these sermons actually came from the region, too. So, you know, I was looking at distance. What I would really be interested in is, like, at your church that was so intimately involved, what kind of reflection on issues of natural hazards has come? You should go back and talk to people about that. I would love to hear if there was a change in understanding through the personal lives of people affected. You know, did they start thinking about the issue of nature differently from these? Or was it just focused on the people suffering, which obviously it should, but was there ever the structural analysis behind it? Did it lead to that? Yeah. I'll go back and just ask a few. Yeah. But even people at a distance weren't doing that either, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, Deb.
You said you had some churches that were urban, suburban, rural.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
In fact, I was also very surprised that there was no difference between the, like those in the United Kingdom that were Baptist and those from the southern U.S. that were Baptist. It was very similar, very similar. So theology obviously was a trump. Yeah. No, I couldn't very well because they were all on the web. I looked at that, so I categorized the church in terms of small and rural and urban and got a general feel for largeness. But yeah.
By age, I meant people.
No, because I didn't have that demographic.
You didn't know if any of the pastors were women.
There were very few that were women. There were several that were, but not generally not. Yeah.
I was a little surprised that you said that really it was the only the Catholics that their sermons would bring out parallels of suffering.
Yeah.
I
think just generally the Catholic tradition works at identifying with the suffering of Christ. You know, they have figures like the saints that they identify with. So I think that's just part of their culture. And to me, it was just something that we could all learn from, because I think it was a very powerful illustration. Exactly. Or that the Holy Family were refugees. Yeah. Any other questions? It's Bill Dembski here.